The Weighing Machine was created to help you, the financial advisor or investor, reach your long-term financial goals. Each episode, your hosts, Rusty Vanneman and I, Robin Murray, cut through the market clamor to find the time-tested principles that help investors succeed.
The Weighing Machine is inspired by the classic investing truism attributed to Benjamin Graham. The stock market is a voting machine in the short run and a weighing machine over the long term. In other words, emotion drives short-term market movement, but fundamentals and valuations drive returns over time.
Welcome to The Weighing Machine.
Enjoy, and as always, let us know what you think.
On the podcast today, volatility returns to the market. What should investors expect? And we review an important stock market study for investors to keep in mind.
We will also discuss inflation's uptick and why we diversify. Plus, could the stock market be headed for a golden decade ahead? Welcome to The Weighing Machine. I'm Rusty Vanneman.
And I'm Robin Murray. Okay, let's start with a look at the markets. We had a very strong August, but volatility returned to the markets this month. So far, we've seen big drops and big rebounds, including slides in really large technology names. What are we watching for at the moment?
Well, so far this year has been extraordinary in so many ways. The losses were so fast, recoveries have been so fast, and it's just, the headlines have really been exceptional. And, the volatility we've had, though, of late probably shouldn't be that surprising. And I think there's a couple reasons for it. First of all, we just had like the fastest 100-day recovery. It's just very natural for the market to catch its breath at some point. The pause that refreshes, the step backwards before the two steps forward, whatever cliche you want to use. So it's very natural, normal for the market to do that. In addition to that, it's this time of year, seasonally, is the weakest time of the year for the stock market. Depends on the study you look at. Some say August is, some say September is. Either way, it's the worst two-month stretch. August was strong, so you just would typically expect September to be weak. August volumes are really low too. So right before Labor Day, we had some really big volatility, some big down days. But again, the market gets pushed around really easily when the volume is light like that. I think another factor, which is exceptional to this year, is of course with all the reopenings, including people going back to school and going to ball games, there is an anticipation we'll see a spike in COVID cases and a potential renewing of lockdowns. We haven't seen that yet, but I think there is still that expectation. And when it comes to technology names, again, the volatility has been very notable, but it should also be noted it's been about 2 months now that technology has been underperforming other sectors of the market, including small cap value.
Well, let's talk technology companies for a moment. Some consider what's happening in the tech sector right now a bubble, or at least some of the names in the sector, including our guest from our last podcast, Rob Arnott. So what's our view on it?
Well, I think there really is. There's a legit story why a lot of these technology names have done so well, and the fundamentals are there too. And of course, when I say fundamentals, I'm really talking about, companies are selling their stuff and they're making money. And so there is really a story there and there's profits there. And the story, of course, is working from home benefit a lot of these technology companies. But you know what? Valuations are getting to be really stretched for a lot of these names. The expectations are getting very stretched. You could say valuation is just quantified expectations. Rob Arnott, I walked through some examples on the last podcast as well. Some of these expectations are just they're really outside the box. Another way to look at it too is the market cap. So you look at all the stock prices times their shares outstanding for the entire tech sector, it is now greater than the entire European stock market. Or if you just look at Apple stock alone now is worth more than every country stock market, with the exception, of course, of the U.S., China, and Japan. It kind of reminds me of, I remember the late 80s when Japan was so dominant. And also, you can say the dot-com era, some of these market caps are just getting really crazy. It's really hard for companies to stay on top. And like tech is right now, tech is almost getting approached one-third of the overall U.S. stock market as well. There's some great examples of large companies that seemed invincible in the past. You could say ExxonMobil seemed invincible. Just 10 years ago, it was the largest company. Now it's knocked out of the Dow Jones. Citigroup, 20 years ago, was one of the world's largest companies. It's lost 85% of its money since then. There are studies that talk about some of these top companies and top sectors often underperform moving forward. Again, Rob Murnaught actually did a study on that. Speaking of Rob, you add it all up. I think the current environment, it does look kind of stretched for some of these technology names, but there is opportunity, I think, for investors to diversify their portfolios and still enhance their potential returns moving forward.
Well, as you said, it's hard for individual companies to stay on top, but is it hard for sectors to stay on top? I'm wondering about technology's dominance in general. Technology is obviously so central to our future. So is it likely that the whole sector will cycle around to lagging the rest of the market? Or will we just start looking for value opportunities within the tech sector?
I think that's a pretty good question. I think when it comes to technology, I guess a couple thoughts here is that, and kind of this is sort of kind of the old school value investor way of thinking, but I think it still applies, is that in a way, technology is a bit of a commodity. I mean, it comes out, there's some innovation, has a big burst, but it has a pretty short life. The innovation cycles move really fast. You know, if you think about pure technology, a lot of it is a commodity. You could almost say like, all companies are in sales and all companies now are in technology as well. It's kind of just almost a classification thing that's going on. And maybe classifications need to change within our economy now. If you think about the companies that have done really well, it's not so much about the technology. It's kind of what they're really trafficking in. And you could say it's data. You could say it's their ability to capture our awareness. It's the ability to influence behavior. And yeah, they're using technology, but you know, it's really they're kind of in a different industry than just simply technology. To kind of answer your question specifically, of course, I believe that value investing, which basically means you care about valuations, you care about the price paid, matters within every single sector. And again, there's various studies over time that have shown that. You add it all up, though, the key, as always, is for investors to just always diversify.
Right. Well, let's stay on that for a minute. Let's talk about how important diversification is. I'm thinking of a study that we've mentioned in the past here on the Weighing Machine, and that's the 2017 study, which is by Hendrik Bessenbinder from Arizona State University. It's called Do Stocks Outperform Treasury Bills? Why is this study so important?
Yeah, we've talked about this study, how much we love it. And senior client portfolio manager Case Eichenberger from CLS Investments loves to talk about this. And quite frankly, as I always say, we still don't talk about it enough. And some of the key lessons about it, and it's always surprises people, and it's almost kind of cocktail party worthy to bring up some of these data points and people want to start talking stocks. But anyway, this study, it goes back to 1926. It looks at nearly 27,000 stocks in U.S. stock market history. This includes all the stocks that have been delisted, which means they died or they were merged away. So you're looking at all of these stocks that ever have been. And what's interesting is that over half of these stocks during their lifetimes delivered negative returns. And only 27% of them actually beat T-bills over time too. I mean, it's just an extraordinary performance over time. Not that many obviously beat the market, but what's really interesting is if you capture just the top 4% of the returning stocks over that entire time frame, that captures the entire stock market gain since 1926. So really it goes to the power of diversification. I think this is a really important lesson in today's environment where we're seeing more and more investors kind of giving up on the diversified approach and just owning, you know, single stocks. And obviously some single stocks have treated people really well, but we've learned this lesson before. And again, this study is kind of a nice way to reinforce it. A couple of just tidbits from that is we just talked about ExxonMobil a while ago, how 10 years ago it was the biggest company. And it actually still easily holds the record, at least for the U.S. stock market at this point, for generating the most wealth for stock market investors over time. And of those top 10 names, only two of them are technology names, and that's Apple and Microsoft, and they're still well below ExxonMobil's historical record. Anyway, it's a fascinating study, and quite frankly, I think for advisors, it's kind of a useful sort of resource to have for those situations when investors just want to be in a stock or two.
Interesting. Let's go back to the current market environment. How have our expectations for the rest of 2020 changed based on what we've been seeing in the markets lately?
Well, I think on balance, for the remainder of this year, still bullish. I think the longer term expectations over the next 5 to 10 years, at least for the U.S. market, are for below average, albeit positive returns. And there are still 5 reasons to remain bullish. And then after that, I do want to mention like 3 things I think, which I think are kind of mispriced in the market in terms of expectations, just based off you know, my conversations with advisors, investors. But the five reasons to remain bullish, and you know, I've probably talked about these in the last few podcasts, is that when it comes to COVID data, it's still in absolute sense. These numbers aren't good. We're still in kind of a war economy in many ways, but the COVID data on balance and the whole story seems to be getting better. Economic data, same thing. Things are getting better. We're coming out of a deep hole, but third quarter GDP could be on an annualized basis plus 30%. I mean, that's just crazy. But obviously it shows things are just getting better. We talk about don't fight the tape. That's just where the expression, the momentum in the market is moving higher. Studies just show that generally you don't want to fight that momentum. Perhaps the biggest reason is don't fight the Fed. Again, fiscal monetary policy has never been of this magnitude before. And that includes looking at the Great Financial Crisis, you know, 1960s, the Great Depression, World War II. The combination of fiscal monetary policy, again, has just simply never been larger. And the last thing is what I call the wall of worry, and that is looking at investor sentiment and in terms of what they're saying and doing. And there are areas, again, which are kind of bubblicious right now. Again, some of these glamour names we've sort of referred to earlier. There's high investor interest, and obviously the optimism there is off the charts, and the contrarian would take note of that. But outside of those names, investors are still overly cautious on balance, and studies show on balance that would suggest above average returns over the next 1, 3, 6, 12 months. And quite frankly, those studies coming into this year look great, and they've only been fortified by what we've seen in the market so far this year. We haven't seen investors bullish since last February, right before the market just slipped into the abyss. Now, there are a couple things that I think are not being, you know, adequately priced in the market right now. I think one is the COVID data. Again, I think just in general, the expectation is that it is going to surge higher. If it doesn't surge higher, which we haven't seen in the data yet, I think that would be a plus for the market. I think the second thing is election chances. I think right now that if you talk to 10 people on the street, probably six plus will think that Biden will win the presidency. And the numbers do bear that out everywhere. However, when you look at economic and market trends and match that with historical records, I think it's really a jump ball between the incumbent and Joe Biden. And then the biggest thing, and this is actually not a positive, is in terms of the election results. And I think if you ask most people, again, when will we find out who the next president is, I think most people, again, would generally say that, well, of course, we'll find out election night or within 24 hours. The reality is it's probably not going to happen. And some people think it could take 2 weeks. Some people think it could take up to 2 months. The markets hate uncertainty. And, you know, the last time we had that was 20 years ago. And again, when it took, I think, 5 weeks for Florida to kind of finalize and for Bush to become president. And during that time, the S&P lost 10%, NASDAQ lost 20%. I think that's a very real risk that could happen. Of course, I think that'd be a buying opportunity because, you know, the Fed still has so much liquidity in the marketplace that if there is that sort of initial reaction. But anyway, I think those are three things that are currently mispriced in the market right now.
How about inflation? It's ticked up over the last couple of months, and the Federal Reserve recently announced a pretty significant change in how it assesses the economy and determines whether it should act. So can you walk us through the inflation outlook and the changes at the Fed?
Yep, I think this is a big deal. Basically, what the Fed said is basically have an inflation target, 2%, and if inflation gets that high, they will react to it. And what they have now said is that inflation has to average 2% over a period of time for them to react to it. Well, inflation has been under 2% for some time. I think over the last 10 years, it's averaged 1.5%. So obviously, they're kind of squishy and still quantifying when they would react to it besides just saying an average. But you could theoretically say it would have to average 2.5% for the next 10 years to average 2% before it gets to 2%. Long story short, it basically was a way for the Federal Reserve to say they're going to keep interest rates lower than many people expect, even if inflation starts to uptick. And inflation is upticking right now. Not only are we seeing it in the data, and you know, there's various studies like it was the biggest jump in inflation in a certain time frame in 10 years. We just had like the biggest jump in 30 years. These data jumps do make sense, and for a combination of reasons. So I think inflation expectations and inflation are going to move higher, but interest rates aren't going to move higher. And of course, I think investors are given this sort of backdrop, or again, best served by globally diversified portfolios and creatively diversifying.
Well, I think this is a good time to restate some principles that actually gave this show its name, The Weighing Machine. You wrote about this in your monthly review. Can you go through your investment philosophy and why it's so important to remember now?
Well, first of all, I thought it was really cool. And Rob, in the last podcast, talked about the weighing machine and the name of it. And the weighing machine basically goes back to a quote that Warren Buffett usually says, but it really goes back to his mentor, Benjamin Graham. And I have read studies that even maybe Benjamin Graham quoted from other people, but basically said the stock market over the long haul is a weighing machine, which means that it's weighing basically fundamentals and valuations, and that over time valuations went out. But over the shorter term, it's really more of a voting machine. It's more about sentiment and investor psychology. And I think we see that each and every day. And hopefully those are the messages that basically resonate through this podcast that we've been doing for years now. But really when it comes to the key parts of the philosophy, I think there's really three components. And it isn't just the philosophy towards making investment decisions, but it's also part of the investment counseling function, I think, which are really important. And first of all, to build and maintain wealth, you do have to invest and stay invested. And the key there is finding that appropriate risk level, of course. And that's why working with advisors is so important for so many investors. The second thing is the price to pay for being in the markets is volatility. And to stay invested, portfolios need to be resilient. They need to be humble. And the best way to do that is to be diversified. And the third thing is don't buy expensive stuff, because a lot of times if you buy really expensive securities, that could create losses that it may take many, many years to recover, if ever. And so those are, I think, all really important. Diversification is under siege a lot of times. People say diversification isn't working. First of all, from a purely technical standpoint, that is always baloney. Diversification always works. Diversification is really about managing portfolio risk. And when you blend two assets together, assuming the correlations aren't 1.0, which means they move exactly in lockstep, which virtually almost no assets do, that means you do get portfolio diversification. It's just math. So diversification always, always works. However, you could say in terms of its impact on risk-adjusted performance, you know, risk-adjusted performance is return divided by risk. Again, the risk side, you're always getting that risk reduction. Obviously, the return side is variable. So it may not appear that it works, but it still does over time. And that's been the practical experience, it's the academic experience, it's the intuitive experience as well, that risk-adjusted performance through diversification will be superior over time. It's just not all the time and every time. It's just that over time it will work.
Well, let's end on a hopeful note for the stock market. A recent article from Gabe Kell, I think I'm pronouncing that right, talked about how we could be entering a golden era for the stock market. Basically, that COVID might produce a stronger world economy and stock market. Pretty interesting stuff. What's the thinking here?
Well, first of all, Gabe Kell, I think that's how you pronounce it too, G-A-V-E-K-A-L. That's how I always say it. They do great work. It's always thought-provoking. They do tend to have a value orientation. And I also, this actually kind of runs counter to what my general assumption is for the next decade. But what they said does make sense. And quite frankly, again, it ties in to the podcast interview with Rob Murnaught last week. And in short, it basically kind of the template to think is that we're kind of in this war economy right now. And the last time we were in such a significant war economy is World War II. And again, the common notion after World War II is that economists expected to see, they did not expect to see this big economic boom. You know, they really thought we're going to go slip right back into the Great Depression. You basically had all these unemployed people, and it was just gloom and doom was really kind of the general consensus view of the time. But instead, of course, the stage was set where the 1950s was still the single best decade for the stock market, even more so than last decade or the 1990s. And again, the biggest reason why, and again, Rob Arnott teased this out, is that the fiscal stimulus, all this Keynesian economics to the pandemic, all this massive liquidity in the system is generally positive for stock market. And again, it just really kind of ties into the results that we've seen over time. You know, there is that notion, we haven't talked about it in a while. And quite frankly, it's really not I don't see it talked about as much, but the reality it's happening is this whole concept of modern monetary theory that you can just print as much money as possible until you see a significant rise in inflation. I don't think there's really a debate out there. I think both political parties have basically accepted it. And quite frankly, it's not hurting the past results that high fiscal stimulus helps the stock market because, again, it's going hand in hand even this year as well. I think one thing you can do is kind of look at the World War II experience and then right after that, and is that a useful template for stock market returns? Of course, every time is different. But again, I think the numbers always do surprise people is that during World War II, the market, stock market actually did generate an annualized return of 26% a year. It did have a little dip right after that. But again, the 1950s set up for the best decade for the U.S. stock market with an average return over 20%. So the conclusion basically was we're going to see a lot of fiscal stimulus. Again, Keynesian economics tends to be a plus for stock market investors. There is a difference between Wall Street and Main Street, and that we could have a golden decade ahead for the U.S. stock market and for the global stock market, really.
Interesting. So, okay, one more note before we close. We got some great news at the 2020 Wealth Management Awards recently. Orion Portfolio Solutions won the TAMP Award and also won for separate accounts due to its really innovative use of direct indexing. CLS Investments won ETF Strategies, direct indexing category. Pretty cool. Awards are fun, of course, but what's important for our listeners to know about what these prizes really mean?
Well, it was really cool. So Wealth Management does a really nice job with the industry awards. They usually have this big swank awards ceremony in New York City. Of course, this year they had to go virtual online. They were very creative in doing that. And Orion, we were nominated for various awards, and we won three, and it was great. And a couple areas were really great. First of all, CLS Investments won ETF Strategist. It wasn't a different category for direct indexing, but they did win it because of their use of direct indexing, which was great. And then Orion Portfolio Solutions won TAMP. So both of those, you know, companies won, which is great. And then also OPS, also for direct indexing and separate accounts and innovative use. So direct indexing is a big deal at Orion. It's a big deal in the industry. And it's one of those things which I think is simultaneously both underrated and overrated. First of all, I think it is overrated because everybody thinks it's going to completely destroy market share from ETFs. I don't think that's going to happen. It's ETFs are around to stay. But it is underrated for people who are not aware of the concept because for taxable investors, direct indexing is like a slam dunk in enhancing after-tax returns. And so anyway, it's a big part of what we do at Orion Portfolio Solutions. That was really cool to be recognized for it.
Yeah, well, congrats to the team and everyone involved. Pretty cool stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, that's going to do it for this week. Rusty, take us out with your final thoughts.
Stay balanced and stay the course.
We'll be back soon. Thanks for listening to The Weighing Machine, and thank you for your time and trust in Orion Advisor Solutions.
The Weighing Machine is hosted by Rusty Vanneman, Chief Investment Officer at Orion Advisor Solutions, and me, Robin Murray, freelance writer and editor. If you have feedback or questions about our podcast today, please send us a note at rusty@orion.com.
Orion Portfolio Solutions, LLC, and CLS Investments, LLC, were selected as winners of WealthManagement.com's 2020 Industry Awards in the categories of Asset Managers Separate Accounts, Asset Managers ETF Strategist, and Turnkey Asset Management Platform. The WealthManagement.com Industry Awards program is an unbiased, third-party organization seeking to recognize companies that support financial advisors. Nominations for the WealthManagement.com Industry Awards were based on submissions from the company describing how it helps financial advisors work with clients. The award goes to the company selected by a judges panel made up of industry professionals. Winners of the categories were announced on September 10th, 2020. WealthManagement.com is not affiliated with Orion Portfolio Solutions or CLS Investments. Ratings and awards may not be representative of any one client's experience and are not indicative of Orion Portfolio Solutions nor CLS Investments' future performance.